This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. In this episode, our guest is Staff Levy, co-founder and CEO, and Elena Papernaya, leader of the go-to-market and growth at Alta Revenue Platform. Welcome on our podcast.
Welcome, guys. How are you doing?
Great. And I believe you pronounced Elena's surname correctly. We already started.
Well, we have a little secret. We're coming from the same territory, I would say. Our families are coming from the same territory. So I recognize how I should pronounce some of the last names.
There's a reason that Dimitri does the intros, because I consistently pronounce names wrong and even company name wrong. So I always let him do it. Well, welcome, guys. We're so happy to have you. Let's just kick it off at a high level of what Alta does. Give us the elevator pitch.
Yeah. So Alta is all about helping revenue leaders and operators to make the most out of their business data. Our platform uses AI to give real-time actionable insight into where their business opportunities are and what effort drives the highest ROI. We believe Revenue Engine, which includes marketing, sales, and customer success, is the most valuable asset for any company. This is true no matter the industry size, business model, and our mission is to ensure that their engine runs as effectively as possible. We integrate and model all of our revenue-related tools. This lets us visualize the entire revenue engine, spot any bottlenecks, identify the potential root cause, and offer actionable insights on best practices from top revenue leaders and experts. And from the early days, from the beginning, our vision was to make business data accessible to everyone in the company and not just to data people. So we designed Alta to be super user friendly and as no code platform. This means that it's easy to use and doesn't need any long setup times. And AI is in the heart of what we do. We leverage the latest AI and LLM revolution to help users work with data more effectively. This saves time and effort that otherwise it will do manually.
Oh, I'm very excited to see the demo. I think this is such a problem for so many companies of like, you're in Tableau for one thing, and in Redash, and in Salesforce, and in this platform. And it's hard to make business decisions without the appropriate data. So I'm very excited to see the demo. I'd love to first just to hear a little bit of the story of the company. You're the co-founder of the company. Where did you guys begin and what's been the journey?
So we are three co-founders. There is more, Shabtai, Tom Hoffman, and myself. And personally, I was one of the first Monday.com employees, which is now a public company with over $10 billion worth. And I was there from the early days, from very beginning, helping the company grow from zero to $100 million in ARR. In the early years of Monday.com, I built a product called Big Brain. It was an internal tool. It's a platform that's accessible to everyone in the company and played a crucial role in driving strong data culture that Monday have. And this tool is also contributed to Monday exponential growth by working with the different layers. So from the board members to the go-to-market leaders, to the operators themselves and the marketing and the sales and the CX space. And what we aimed was to make the engine work more effectively and to help each person be 10 times more effective than what is without Big Brain. Later, I led the organization, the growth organization, and founded the different growth initiatives, started the growth initiative like a Monday product, a CRM, or Monday dev, and use Big Brain in order to spot opportunities and inefficiency. I think over the years I was in Monday.com and talked to many companies that dealing with the same problem. And also we saw that there is a big gap in the market. So R&D teams have tool like a Datadog to monitor their servers, and data teams have Monte Carlo to monitor their data. And we felt like the business layer have a gap. And companies invest heavily into their go-to-market strategies, but often lack best practices solution to monitor and measure their funnels effectively. So this is how we came up with Alta, to fill this gap and help companies avoid repeating the same mistakes and instead applying best practices constantly. And Tom Hoffman, my co-founder and our CTO, worked with me at Monday from early days. He led the billing and the monetization area. And Mo Shabtai, our COO, is a serial entrepreneur. I had two startups. His last one was Experity. It was acquired by Ipsos, and he felt a lot of this issue himself.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you guys have some powerhouse startup founders or contributors in your mix.
And actually, we three of us, we know each other like from years and years ago. We really neighbors. So we also were friends before we started this journey together, which really helped us form it like correct.
So you were neighbors living nearby as well?
Me and Tom in the university together. We studied computer science in the Hebrew University in Israel. And also like our parents work together. We have a really like long past, like long history. And Moore was a very good friend of Tom. And then we didn't accidentally move to live together. We were actually a part of a group of friends.
So we can call it a family business at this point, essentially.
I'm wrong.
I want to highlight one thing that I think in your introduction of your idea emerges. I think that it's amazing how success of Monday.com empowered so many people to start looking for another ideas and convert them into a startup.
Perfect.
It's really amazing how these environments really build up and they become big and emanate the skill set, but also the open doors for many others to jump on the same train and build something amazing. Cool. Nice work.
There is a few startups that came from Monday.com early employees. And I think the reason is we experienced something really unusual in terms of the culture and in terms of what we build and like how the way we build and form the company. So I think we feel like it's a good opportunity for us to take this and leverage to more ideas that came actually from the work over there.
What Dimitri said, it's actually interesting because if you think about it, Monday.com also came out of Wix, which is another startup. The team there, they kind of built an internal project management tool, and then they understood that there's a bigger gap. There's no tool that can fit. And I think it's beautiful where big companies give birth to small companies to become big. And then hopefully this continues, you know, moving forward.
We always ask about the founder story. We love hearing about it. And I think it's awesome and inspiring to share with other people. But often there's like a problem internally, and they start to build a tool, and then it's like, oh, I think other companies probably have this problem. How do we go and let them just use the thing that we've built in a new iteration? You're also living my dream. Like, to start a company with friends is the best case scenario. So, and Alina, how did you get involved with Alta?
Well, firstly, I also live in the same area, but that's not the plan.
Hey, so we have no chance, Lizzie. We have no chance.
No, we're not getting in. We have to move in the neighborhood to get in there.
But actually, yeah, I can tell you personally, I experienced the problem that I was describing earlier. I also worked at Monday.com before, and I was in charge of technology partnerships there. And once I had to build a dashboard to present, you know, the results of one strategic partners that I worked on. And I had to combine data from product and Salesforce instance and CS and marketing into one place to have an overview of what are we doing here. And then I felt that I had to go between Salesforce admins and then product analysts and then data engineers to build it all together. And then I said, there must be a better way. It can't be so complicated. So many people are working on it. And then it's really almost impossible to put Salesforce and product in one dashboard. So I said to myself, there must be a better way. I really like to move fast and be independent in what I do. And relying or kind of depending on analysts to build easy, quick reports and get answers to simple questions also didn't make a lot of sense to me. So when Stav and Tom and Moore like mentioned what they're building, I said, yeah, sure, I'm definitely joining. Plus, I know the people and I know it's going to be fun. And fun is super important to have when you work. So here I am.
We are very reliant on analysts for a lot of what we do. And I go to, you know, the BI team to get my sales data or the RevOps team. And then I'm going to the product analytics team to understand what is it. And working in partnerships, like all of those things matter to me. I care about the product integration, the partner integration, adoption rate. And then I also care about what the lead generation is. I'm going to the marketing team and I'm going to the sales. And then I like cobble together this report and I say, this is how we're doing, but it's not that accurate. And I'm curious to hear from your perspective. I'm sure we'll get into this more later too. Like, you think AI is going to allow analysts to not do some of the more mundane tasks that they do and do some like deeper analytics and strategy work? What's your take on that?
It's a very big question that we're dealing at the moment. For what you said, like it never ends there. Like when once you have the report is good. So question leads to an answer that leads to another question. So it's an always, it's a loop. And then I think with the food comes the appetite. So once you get a little bit of data, you want to know a little bit more. And then sometimes you don't get the resources. The analyst doesn't have time. So I think there must be a better way of dealing with business data and leverage it to drive business growth. And I think LLM and AI, it can play very crucial role here, not in analyzing the information, because I think that LLM, in terms of technology, it's not the right place to analyze data. But yep. What it is, it's a very good translator from the human language with the metadata to the right question, to like also shape the right question and then help you reshape the question so you know you have the correct question. Because even to ask a question, it's not that obvious in business-related questions. So it's helped you to define the question better, and then it can help you build better like the query, the question. So LLM and AI definitely will play a very big role in it, not in analyzing the information, but it is first of all, in lowering the gap of who can answer and ask the business question and touch business data. Secondly, in not doing the mundane work of like every day doing again and again. This is like insane that until today, we have analysts that are doing very mundane work instead of doing the ad hoc, really important strategy analysis that they could do. We see it almost in every company.
Yeah. You're saying something that I think we hear over and over again of like AI is going to do the mundane, more operational, make this look like this work, and it will allow humans to do the things that humans do best, which is draw conclusions and give reasons why and those types of things. So where's Alta at in terms of like your financing journey, and are you looking to raise capital, and what are you investing in the most right now?
We raised a privileged seed round from a year and a half ago when we just started Alta. From top VCs, we have Target Global and Entry Capital, who was the first investors in Monday.com, actually.
You had an in there with those investors?
Yeah, probably. And we also get support from well-known angel investors like Sequoia, General Atlantics, and the leaders from Monday.com, Notion, and Airtable, and et cetera. And also the former CRO of Salesforce, Gavin Peterson, is on our advisory board. So we had a really privileged round in the term, and we're currently not looking to raise any additional capital.
It's nice to know people that have seen you be successful before and be able to utilize that. I also love Notion as a tool. I've used it in the past, and it's great. Yeah.
I think it's also a consequence of working at Monday.com. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's so much credibility with that success. That thing is quickly adding into the conversation. Hey, we all been there. We all seen it. You know, we're coming from this environment. Oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, I was just throwing the money into this. Let me talk to you. I think it's just an awesome story as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and also it really helped us with like, we see a lot of failure along the way. Also in Monday.com, it's important to say we had a lot of failures until the success. But I feel like because we managed to see a lot of initiatives and segments failed in terms of ROI, but we also see great success. So it's really helped us understand a revenue engine better and what helps to form data-informed culture in company. So I think it's really helpful. Like, yes, definitely it helps us like to open doors, but it's also really helped us like with building what we're building today, like to build, we build a great product and understand like the needs of the market.
You've had some time to think about this for a while because you've done it internally. That's always nice as well. And so where are you investing that capital in? How big is the team? What, you know, are you hiring? What does that look like?
So we currently mainly investing in our product and technology. I'm assuming whoever listened to the podcast is familiar with the problem that revenue operators and business leaders face. So I think in that terms, we had really previous like quite high demand from very early days. And I believe that the way that we can grow is by offer a really excellent product that addresses the issue. So this is the reason we invest mainly in the product and technology currently. And we also use even Alta for Alta, like we use it for ourselves. So it's really helped to lower the amount of people in the go-to-market team because every person is a 10x of himself. So for example, I get alerts for every new paying customer that we have or interesting segment that are rising or customer that wasn't engaged in the product for a few days. So I need to know why and like how to operate. So in that term, we can keep low volume go-to-market team and put a lot of effort in product and technology, especially in the very fast evolving market in the area of AI and the need and the demand in Copilot features and AI features.
It's nice that you can have anyone in the company jump on a sales call and say, hey, can you do a demo of this? Because they use it every day.
Speaking about a demo, yeah, let's dive in. Let's see what you got.
There's a few use cases I want to share, okay? That's not a screen share. It's all voiceover, if that's okay. So there's two use cases. I will start with the one which I think is quite exciting personally for us. It's one of our largest customers. It's a huge enterprise with a few thousand employees globally, worldwide. And when you think about this kind of company, they're in financial services. So it's quite a tech-savvy company, and you would expect them to have a great data setup, you know, because they grew to a certain level somehow. But actually, they reached out to us. It was an inbound, you know, request with a problem that they're missing a crucial information for that they need for their company to grow regarding upsell and cross-sell opportunities. Okay, so what happens is they have multiple products. Every product has their own sales team, and every product has their own sales force instance. So what they would like to see, they would like to see information across multiple sales force instances into one place. And they would like account executives from each product to have an overview of the account, not only regarding one product, but overall. So the account executive teams can receive, you know, alerts and notifications about the prospect to reach out to them in the right time and offer them the right product. Okay, based on the insights that we collect from Salesforce, from multiple other data sources that they use. And actually, it was an exciting project, and we managed to give them the value. And after implementing Alta, they saw an increase around 30% in their cross-sell and upsell opportunities and other metrics, which was super exciting. And again, working with like large enterprises that have big data teams, and we could still give them this value and, you know, impact their revenue, which super exciting for us here. And another one is actually us ourselves at Alta and me personally. So I manage go-to-market and I'm doing many different things. And Alta really helps me a lot because I can not only see all the marketing campaigns and channels in one place instead of switching between, you know, every channel platform, but I can also see how leads from different campaigns interact with our product, like what features they use, depending on where they're coming from, how much revenue they generate, how much opportunities and at which type of opportunities they generate, because, you know, we combine marketing channels, product analytics, and our CRM data in one place. I also save time on analyzing this data because the AI and LLM that staff mentioned earlier, firstly, I can just go in and use the Copilot to ask a question. For example, what's the conversion rate of leads from campaign A versus campaign B? Okay, instead of building a complex SQL and I just get an answer through the Copilot. Or I like the alerts and notifications when, for example, I get an alert when the lead score of certain campaign is dropping below, let's say 10 or whatever the number is. So it's really helps me to use data in managing the go-to-market and saves a lot of time. I don't like SQL. I know very basic things there. And I always felt quite stupid when working with this. But now I feel much smarter and informed, and I love using it for ourselves.
How much easier is to integrate all these different sources through Alta?
So integrations are really one click. Okay, most of them, you don't need to have developers or IT involved. Thankfully, in 2024, we have over 50 integrations available, and it's quite also relatively easy for us to add new sources as well. So it allows us to kind of serve very different type of customers, and we are tech agnostic. I think that's the right word.
A lot of analysts or people that are working on multi-sources integration, you know, putting this into some sort of SQL database, they're telling me, oh, it's going to take us, you know, a couple of weeks to get done. You're saying I can get it done in a couple of days, maybe a day?
I guess, look, the short answer, yes, we can. The longer answer, yes, it depends on also how complex is the data. If a data source is already something that we work with, like Salesforce, HubSpot, Mixpanel, Stripe, Intercoms, and there's Snowflake directly. So it really depends on kind of who are we talking to. It can take a little bit longer if it's something we never worked before. But once the data, the integration is easy and fast. And then the data modeling part is the magic that I think also happens very fast. I think staff knows the details a bit more than I do about how it happens. But we managed to build a POC with value to our customer in less than, I would say, a week for someone that usually takes a few months to get done, okay, or a few weeks to get done. So from connecting the data to having ready dashboards and business insights, it took that a week, and it's quite a big company with a lot of data. So I don't know if that answers your question, Dimitris.
Yeah, it does. I think, you know, the fact that you can quickly build up the POC, it's already a testament that there's something going on here and that's positive, right? And you can quickly prove the value, which of course is helping a selling process, but it predominantly is showing these users that, hey guys, this is really working. You know, you don't have to spend all that time. You have a long line of people waiting for analysis from you, right? And some insight, some input for my business to make a decision, right? You don't have to spend it right now, 2 months to really build this up. I have a question that maybe your tool is solving for that or will solve soon for how the tool is helping to deal with the data noise, right? So you mentioned the complexity, and that's always a problem in the companies that, you know, they're scaling, they're adding more stuff and you're becoming more complex. But a lot of that stuff has a quality problem. And the data quality is a prevalent problem in a lot of RevOps, right? Like, why I can't give you an exact answer with the good recommendations? And my answer is, okay, that data has a doubtful quality. I don't want to say more. I don't want to use my French now. But, you know, that's often a conversation. There's a lot of noise. I'm not confident about the output. How do you deal with that?
First of all, when we hear someone in demo saying our data is a mess or our, like, the data hygiene is terrible, or we know we're in a good fit because we're thrive with complexity. Like Alina said, after we have the integration, we bring all the different data sources from the revenue related tools. We have ontology layer. We have like semantic layer that is mapped out all the different objects and entities, connection between them, and create kind of a digital twin of the business or the go-to-market engine. And then what we do is, first of all, we have questionnaire, like very important process with revenue team is to understand what they want to take out of it, what they want to measure, what is the important metrics. Like, first of all, we help them by showing them where do we see the gaps, where we see the data is not filled correctly, which fields. So this is like also part of our questionnaire is showing them where the data is not clean, and we don't want to use their own field, and instead we use our own enrichment tool to fill the gaps and where the data is not full to the end. And by the questionnaire, they help us understand what is the metrics, is they important for them to track. We also suggest and offer what do we think they should track. We also see a lot of different companies, so we understand where usually the pitfalls, where usually the data is not clean enough. Let's say, for example, very, very common thing is when people don't do all the stages one by another, and like they're going back and forward between stages in their Salesforce. Okay, this is the most common example, and there is a very easy solution for it. So first of all, we can look at if someone went back and forward, so we don't take the back and we take just the forward. And there is a really easy way to clean the data and like and organize it. And I don't think that every business needs to do it again and again. And a lot of best practices that we learn along the years, and we also have a lot of different industry experts and revenue leaders that help us think in that term. So we use this information and then we help them look at their data in a more accurate way and to make more data-informed decisions.
I think your answer is giving me a lot of confidence that you offer the element of the consultative selling that educate the buyer about their problems. And then within the tool, you have features that help solve that, but also help them to address this from the framework perspective. I think you mentioned something that is very important. You mentioned ontologies and definitions, which very often are not well defined in a lot of companies. They just they think they're going to measure something, and it's a mix of different experiences that people bring to the company. And I don't know how many times I've heard this. Oh, in my previous company, we were doing this that way. Well, look, but you're in the new company, and that company has a product or service that might be very different to what you were doing before. Right? And as we know, operational metrics, those SaaS metrics, these are not a SEC dictated financial metrics that you have to report on the market, right?
They're willy-nilly.
So,
depending on the company. So,
well, I mean, some companies report them, but that's not a requirement. That's all I'm saying, right? There's no standard like a GAAP, you know, in finance will tell you that.
It's a metric that helps you understand what is the pace of the company and how is it going to evolve in the future. Right. And like, you need to do any specific actions because there is a churn risk or anything like that. So ARR the definition can vary a little bit from company to company even. So it's not even about what metric is out to think of the metric and what question we need to ask about each metric. So I think it's really to help them think about the process of what they want to measure, how they want to track it. We even bring concept like bow tie to the conversation and help them think in a more structured way on their revenue growth. It's an important part of the process of helping them gain more confidence in the product and leverage the product and the features into to the revenue growth.
This is phenomenal. Speaking about metrics, what are the metrics that you recommend, you know, the audience and buyers should pay attention to?
I think it really depends on who is the buyer, because again, our product is actually can be good fit for multiple personas, right? So we can talk about sales leadership like VP sales. We can talk to VP marketing or CMO, and we can also talk to rev ops, you know, operational leaders. So I think that's like, I'm going to have three parts to this answer. For sales leaders, we think it's important not just to analyze the sales funnel and the efficiency and velocity of this funnel, but also to understand the best segments. And it's important so they can focus their energy and their team efforts and the marketing efforts on the right segments, right? So for example, if you find out that your sales rep, Dimitris, converts leads from e-commerce 300% more than anyone else, so you probably will allocate leads from this industry this sales rep because it's going to bring you the highest ROI. For marketing leaders, besides the obvious marketing performance metrics, I think it's also important to look deeper in the funnel to understand how those leads perform in the sales funnel. What packages do they buy? How often do they convert? So you can actually also understand the ROI of your campaigns or your marketing efforts and TROI, which is the time of return on investment, how soon you're going to get your money back. And I think if you're zooming out on the CRO and RevOps level, it's crucial to have the full picture. Also, actually, the founders is another persona I forgot to mention, which I will put them together with CROs because I think they want to have a full picture of marketing, sales, CS, and maybe finance as well, and have, you know, a bird's eye view into everything, but also be able to slice and dice data and zoom in if they want to identify both bottlenecks. Our latest feature, which is the scenario planning, is probably really important for leaders because they can see how, I don't know, increasing budget by 5% will impact the bottom line by X amount of percentage, or how, you know, cutting the sales cycle by 3 days for 3 weeks will impact the bottom line. So I think kind of playing with these scenarios is also super important for revenue leaders. The metrics, I think it's a longer answer for leaders, but yeah, the most obvious ones are revenue and the efficiency of your team, and of course, ROI.
That all makes a lot of sense. But do you see that like sales leaders or C-level executives are coming and saying, hey, we want this product? Or are you seeing like BI teams and data analytics teams coming? What order does it go typically?
So I think what usually happens is that either the business leader is having a problem and they're trying to solve it themselves by going online and figuring out how to solve it. Or if it's a bigger org, they will come to the data team and be like, hey, I'm missing this and that. And then the data person, and that's kind of what we see a lot, CDO or CTO, CDO is the chief data officer, it will kind of go and look for a solution to provide the business users with an answer. So in the end of the day, it's a business user looking for a solution, but it either be directly them going online or, you know, going out there to research or with the data team.
It's like the sales or revenue leader, even marketing leader is like, I'm annoyed I'm not getting this data. I want to find a solution to it.
Yeah, I think a lot of CTOs, CDOs, or anyone who is tasked with this tedious metric finding process is hitting one fundamental problem, which is benchmark. It's easy probably to come up with some calculation. It's relatively difficult to assess how much impact it is, you know, for the business sometimes, right? Because it could be a high-level metric that is not really going deep, and arguably NPS would be one of them, right? Like, okay, it's measuring something, it's giving you an idea, but, you know, you don't know exactly where this is coming from. That's kind of the whole NPS idea. But what really is difficult to do is to have a benchmark. I don't know how good I'm doing on that metric. So what is your answer to that? Like, how would you guide your customers with that task?
I think many times you have like a metric and then you try to figure out the metric and then you have like, I don't know, a conversion to, I don't know, negotiation, for example, it's 8.7%. Is it good? Is it bad? Like, am I okay? So this is a question that we're facing. We do offer a benchmark inside the product for a specific metric. We did this kind of as a very experimental feature. We took this information from online, did some research for different segments, for different company types. So it's a very experimental feature inside the product to help them get benchmarks on what is the metric value could be. It's also help us with the actionable insights. So if something is really below benchmark, we can say, we think you can improve here or there and then get much higher. Although I can say this is something that I feel is not really cracked in our product yet. We're still working on improving it because it's really, really depend. There is different benchmark for different types of companies. And you cannot say really there is like one line, I don't know, like one conversion, even if it's a very similar type of company. So in the end of the day, we look a lot of overtime analysis and saying like, did you improve or does the metric improve or decrease? During this time, like we're saying, okay, you're in some place. Now you want to go up. You can also see by the history if you went up a specific metric. And I think like benchmark, it's something that a lot of people are looking for, but it's something that it's really hard to get confidence if this benchmark is really representing your company or your specific initiative or your specific product or this go-to-market approach, or there is a lot of variance in this field. So it's hard to say this benchmark is correct to everyone.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you're saying is that there's a time series of data you can collect and you're going to benchmark yourself against the other periods, right? And changes, which is important benchmark, let's be honest. And I agree with you. It's really hard to solve the problem of being in a specific industry, sometimes even sub-industry that has a very narrow niche-like problem that it's solving, and then benchmark yourself on the same metric, you know, again, you know, with some other company that is completely different industry. I'm looking forward to see how you're going to tackle this in the future, and I'm pretty sure once you have it, it's going to be pretty awesome addition to what you already have. Yeah.
Important to say that we do have this feature, but I just feel like it's not at a place that I can say this benchmark is for sure right for every company. So yeah, so some companies do benefit from understanding like, oh, our, we are like really below conversions. It may say something about our sales process.
Gotcha.
You can look at like, what has this been for this company in the past? And then what is it now? And what my company does, or many companies do when you're in that situation, is, well, what if we look at this or this or this and like see, and we try to figure it out. We like, I think the benefit of using LLMs is like, you can look at everything and say, what did change, instead of trying to back end engineer and figure that out. Yeah. So it sounds like, Alina, as you were chatting through like who you sell from the startup level to enterprises. Are you seeing this be a fit for all sizes, or what does your ICP look like?
Currently, what we see is that we are usually a better fit to companies that are large or medium-sized because they already have data and revenue and a few dozen sales reps. So there is a bit of complexity there and they need help because we don't want to oversell the product to someone who doesn't need it, because in the end of the day, that's not going to help anyone. So at the scale of having few sales reps, having revenue, having a CRM and so on, you would like to analyze the data, okay? And actually, you can get insights that can be a game changer for your company growth once you are already at a certain stage of medium or large companies. Saying that, we also see a lot of demand, again, coming from the inbound from smaller companies. Often it's going to be founders or C-level executives, like financial leaders as well, who feel like they're missing visibility into their business. They don't understand or they don't know enough how much paying customers they have, from which segments, which sites, which products they're buying, what is the ARR, what is the conversion rate. A lot of metrics that are quite straightforward, but they don't have the right tools or they don't have the people. They don't want to, you know, hiring a team. It's time consuming and quite costly. They do come for a tech solution like Alta, and they actually use our metric store that we have specifically built for helping users to get value quickly. They're pre-built already and they're out of the box. And also very often the leaders like the, you know, the co-pilot, the LLM feature where they can just go in and ask a question. They feel like they have freedom in working with their business data instead of being dependent on someone within a team. And of course, it saves time and cost, as I mentioned earlier. Therefore, it's kind of can give value for larger companies, but we do see smaller companies, small, medium-sized companies coming to us as well. Industries, I think, again, we're not limited here because it's a SaaS platform that helps businesses track metrics. But I think traditionally, as we probably all know, that technology companies are the early adopters of new technology, as well as financial services and just services in general. They kind of looking for software, being tech-savvy. So we just see a lot of demand from them. But from technical standpoint, we're not limited to serve manufacturing companies and big retail companies, commerce companies, and so on.
I see the benefit of like more and more AI platforms coming to market. Obviously, B2B tech is going to adopt it first. That's typically what we see. But because you're not building standard dashboards or standard ways of getting the information, anyone can take advantage of it. So it's not like you have to fit into this very specific use case, which has been the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years of SaaS companies. I think it's exciting to see like, okay, so we build this product, test it. We really make it the best we can with B2B SaaS companies that have the willingness to do that. And then we can move into industries with a full-fledged product that we feel confident with people who are maybe a little more risk averse, which is exciting. Obviously, a lot of people are trying to solve the problem of data analytics. I'm sure you're selling against some like status quo companies being like, no, we can do this ourselves. We don't have to do it. But who do you see as your competitors?
I think this is one of my favorite questions, just because it's also not a straightforward answer. Because again, I think we are building here something new. It's not like a CRM tool. It's not a BI tool. It's a tool that does something that is different from what the way it was done before. The competitor that we hear sometimes is Clari. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. And people, when we tell them sometimes, we do it like, oh, it sounds like Clari. And it's good for us because it kind of gives some sort of indication of what we do. But then we explain to them that what is the difference between us and Clari. And here, I think there's few. I think the first thing is that we are connected to 40, 50, I'm always not sure, keeping eye on how many we have tools. So it's not just Salesforce or CRM, it's a lot of different tools in one place. We offer advanced analytics, visual, like cohort analysis and so on. I think the one thing that we're proud of is that everything is transparent. So you can see how everything is calculated, how, what is the SQL behind it, what is the metric, what's the logic behind it as well. I think this is also creates a lot of trust when people work with us, the customers. We've heard a lot that it was a black box when they work with Clari. They just got the answer, but they couldn't understand how this answer was calculated. So I think it creates a little bit of a barrier to trust with. So we really believe in transparency of data internally and in our product. Really, everything is very clickable. You can slice and dice and get into the details of how things are done. That's, I think, one kind of angle to the competition. I think that angle to competition is that, especially with large companies, and it's an example that I think I spoke earlier, is the internal BI tool teams or data teams. You know, they kind of do similar things with what we do. But I think, again, here it's different because, you know, we're a tool for business leaders to use, right? There, it's not a service. It's a platform that they can use. We save them time and cost on having the team, but not just having the team and also analyzing the data. For example, if you're a CRO and you want to look into like the last Q in a big traditional company with the BI team, you're going to go to your, you know, the leader of the BI and you say, okay, I want to have a report or I want to have a dashboard that analyzes the key performance. And then they say, okay, it's going to take us a few days in the best case scenario to do it. And then you have a meeting internally and then the analyst will present the dashboards, you all, and then everyone will discuss what is the outcomes of this report. And here, the dashboards are already kind of pre-built for you because they're very easy to use platform. And on top of it, AI will give you business insights, not just the raw data, the raw numbers. We will say, okay, this segment has increased by 50% comparing last quarter. Perhaps you should, you know, focus your budget on this segment. Or as I gave you other examples about, you know, lead conversion and so on. So it's not just raw reports. It's also opinion or like, I like to call it 24/7 analyst. Looking at your data and giving you insight. And I love alerts. Dav mentioned alerts. I'm getting alerts. So again, instead of being reactive with your data, again, if someone prepares a report, you find the problem. Here you get an alert as soon as there is some sort of anomaly, change, drop, increase. Again, it's going to get to your Slack or email immediately. So it kind of makes you be much more fast and proactive in your decision making, instead of kind of react to changes and then make a decision.
Clari is a good tool and has been doing great things. So no shade against it, but it's always nice as you're kind of defining a new category to be like this thing and it orients people, but here's how we do it differently or better or make it easier for you. And I'm sure they'll invest and do different things too.
I think you're always looking for a big brand to challenge. I mean, that's the purpose of the startup, right? Like, what's the point to open another company if you don't challenge what the status quo is? So that's what I like about this. That is not that, not this. There's a lot of other examples across the industry that did exactly that. Look at HubSpot.
Okay.
And that's exactly that story. It was not fitting this and it was not fitting that and for a long time. And there's a price tag right now that the Google is contemplating about, right? $31 billion. That's a lot of money for something that was not defined.
Yeah. It's also true about Bundy.com. Like when we just started, so people was like, what is it? Is it an Excel? Like it's Excel on steroids. Like what is this thing? Like, and it was really hard to like say, who is the competition? What is it like? People was like, so is it a competition of Slack? And we're like, no, it's like a work management platform. Like I think it was really hard to explain in the beginning what is it. And the reason is exactly as you're saying, is like when you're questioning the status quo about how things work today and how it can work better. So it's hard to define a specific competitor, but it does good that we have like a market landscape and then they can map us a little bit in the market. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's always nice to be like, oh, I can replace these three tools and reorient this team with this one tool. And I think HubSpot's a really good example. especially as you talk about, like, you're working with some smaller companies and helping them out, often, like, these tools like Clary and others were reserved when you have a lot of money to invest into tools, so you're a bigger company. And that's what HubSpot did well. They're like, you can be early days and work with us, and we have a product offering for you. It doesn't sound like you're having a problem with creating demand for your tool, but I'd love to hear just a little bit in terms of, like, how are you going to market? Are you leveraging any partnerships to do that as well?
We're keeping in mind that we work with different type of companies, right? For larger enterprises and smaller companies or smaller accounts. So I think it's a combination of different channels or different approaches to go to market. For smaller accounts, it's more of a product-led growth model, where it starts with a marketing campaign or maybe a presence on the marketplace like Stripe or HubSpot Marketplace or Salesforce. We offer a free trial, okay? So the user will just see an ad or see us on the marketplace, sign up for a trial. And through our user onboarding, metric store, AI insights, and kind of the product itself, they will get the value immediately or during the 14 days. And when the trial is over, they just upgrade to paid plan. So that's kind of the scenario for smaller accounts. For large accounts that has a lot of complex data sets, customization within their data, and so on, it is still a product-led, but it's product-led sales, where it's going to start in the same point through a marketing campaign, maybe marketplace presence or an event. They can sign up for a trial just to explore and get, I think it's these days, I think there you have often expectations to be able to see the product just to get a feeling of it. But then we're going to talk to them. We're going to help them set the account for them. We're going to show them the full value because their data set is a bit more complex. And the new kind of channel we are testing out is the referral/reseller partners as well. Focusing on referrals right now, that's because there is a lot of companies in the field that help other companies to set up their data, set up their RevOps. And we do believe that our product can really add lots of value. The companies, the consultants believe so as well. So why not to work together?
Yeah. Very partnerships led growth, which is something I always like to hear. Obviously, the marketplaces are a great place to do that. I also love that you're letting larger companies do a trial and dig in there. I don't think a lot of companies do that with mid-market enterprise companies. And I think it's really smart because it's hard to commit to something and be like, we've never used this before. Like, why would we? It's just a hard commitment to make. So I love that. And then I think the consultant angle is great. I make sure you're doing this because we see an opportunity to help go-to-market teams figure out like how to set things up, what tools to offer. And there's a growth there in terms of consultancies and agencies that are helping. So that's awesome that you're starting a referral program.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, I wouldn't expect anything else from the company that is proudly claiming has a 50 integrations, right? Like you got to be partnership oriented. So I think it's just the fabric of the company and organization and the product itself, you have to be collaborative, which is fantastic, right? So what's the next phase on the product roadmap? Like what do you see this next big thing you're going to go after?
Very naturally, our primary focus is continue to enhance our AI capabilities and to provide more precise and actionable insights to our users. And also to work more on our co-pilot feature, which helps revenue leaders make more data-informed decisions. One of our key features is developing the predictive analytics into a better phase. This will help users not only understand their current data, also the future trends and opportunities. And by that, give a better actionable insights based on how the future can evolve. We also improving our visualization tools to make it even easier to our user to interact and act on their data. And additionally, we're working on our alert system to provide more customizable and timely notification for critical events and insights. But at the end, our prioritization is heavily influenced by our user feedback and also our observation on the market. So we stay close with our users and understand their needs and challenges that they're facing. And it helps us to ensure that the roadmap and the features we are working with is directly addressing the most pressing issues that revenue operators and leaders have.
So it sounds like everything you said is just a forward-looking mechanism that is helping to understand, you know, what the history is telling me about the future and when I on this path I should react and weigh in, and also you can share the feedback so that we can make it more user-friendly for you and more adjusted, customized to your business itself. I mean, that's great. I need to applaud you about being so much customer-focused, right? A lot of these tools are saying, okay, you can do this that way, or you can do this other way, right? And that's because there's not a lot of conversation between the customers and the company, right? The product has to evolve, and you can't evolve if you don't have input. And there's always a limited number of ideas you can come up internally. So you always need to look for something that is more endemic and is giving you the ability to bring in and just have that perspective that you technically couldn't develop, right? Arguably, it's much easier to handle this when you are a company of five than when you're a company of 50 or 150, because then the culture is just so much company-oriented, shielding this from the external world. So you need to have some mechanism that can bring you that information in. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. We look at ourselves as an opinionated, customizable platform. So first of all, in order to have an opinion, you have to listen. Like, you have to understand what is the and how people is using it today. Like, we cannot just tell them, like, this is our opinion, this is how you should use it. And like, we really need to understand, like, how they're using it, what is good about it, what is not. And this is how we can have more opinion in our platform. And also, in the end, it is have to be customizable. So there is like a lot of different go-to-market engine. It's like there is no one-size-fits-all. It's not a cookie-cutter product. And in order to make a product that is customizable, but it's still easy to use, which is many times people think about it as a contradictive thing, but I really think, like, after being many years at Monday.com, it's really not contradictive. You can be customizable and easy to use in the same time. But in order to do it, you have to prioritize, like, what is the hierarchy of customizable level? Like, what do you give users to customize easily? What is like in a deeper phase or like deeper hierarchy inside the product? So it's really important for us to be very user-centric and understand their needs and like by that shape our roadmap.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and like I said this before, by default, you broadly aggregate a lot of sources, so you have to offer some customization. I mean, that's the whole idea here, right? There's some template, but you know that template can be still modified.
Yeah.
So let's go a little bit more broadly. You know, let's go outside and let's look at the market. What is, in your opinion, going on the market? Number one question. Number two is, and how you think the AI is influencing this the space that you're operating in?
The market is definitely shifting rapidly with the advantage of generative AI. There is like early entrants like us. They have an advantage of being nimble and innovative and to quickly adapt what we build and how we build it and the technologies to enter this market demand. And I think it's really easy to see that there is a really high demand for generative AI. I think every startup or every company is like, if you go to the main homepage, like the website of Salesforce, you will see an AI copilot, the Einstein AI. I think it shows that there is a big demand to those features. If big companies that have access to a lot of users understand that this is the right messaging that they should show right now. Like we said in the beginning, there is no doubt that the area of business operation and leveraging business data in order to drive revenue growth, it cannot be so mundane and like have so much rely on analysts. So I really think like the market is going there, the demand is over there. Lots of product is doing many adaptation and trying to form their product in order to leverage the AI and generative AI to answer this demand.
I was just at a day and a half conference, and I think there were six sessions that had AI in the title. So it is certainly a buzzword. And I think what's to your point, like, being an early adopter of it, but also, you know, not having been around for a very long time beforehand, it's really easy to really build a platform from the ground up on AI. I think what, as a company that's been around for 15 years where I am, I'm like, we have an AI product. It's not generative AI, but we should be using AI for ourselves. We should be thinking about how do we leverage AI for go-to-market tools and other tools we're using. And then we should think about how do we make it easy for people to interact with our product. We're not going and building a product from the ground up using generative AI right now. And so it's just an interesting time where you see new entrants entering and really doing cool things, and older companies trying to like figure out how do we fit into this. It's exciting. We needed something to like spice things up in the industry.
Yeah. And also in the end of the day, I think like tech giants and big companies, in order to bring innovation and technology, they're using M&As and not necessarily developing it now. So then there is a reason why. Like I worked with big companies in my life. I worked at Intel for many years and I can understand why it's happened. It's really hard to move things when you are like in huge ship. And it's much easier when you're small and adaptive. And exactly like Dimitri says, when you're 5 people or, I don't know, 10,000 people. So it's different to navigate the ship.
Yeah, it's exciting to see that M&A opening up more, right? Like we're seeing it more and more and pick back up after a few years where it wasn't as exciting for the industry.
The M&A is opening up, but we are still far away from the moment when the AI will be part of the M&A. That market is still in its own infancy. And there is a demand for that. And I think a lot of these big players, when you listen to these investor relations calls, I was listening to Salesforce recently, Asana,
yeah,
a couple of others. I think they failed to fit the expectations of the analysts, yeah, and the market on the AI picking up in their product. And big part of that is that the customers and the users, they haven't figured out how to really get there.
Yeah.
There's this like an interim step in between where there's an element of productivity, old way of doing things versus AI. And I'm trying to figure out where are the elements of my daily productivity tasks that, yeah, this AI can apply.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not settled and that's hard to do. Right. So that's why this narrative actually didn't resonate well. If you look at the Salesforce stocks, you know, on one day, that thing went down by $50, $60.
Yeah.
Right. So that's substantial.
Yeah.
Asana didn't go up after their narrative, even though they were more honest about that. Nevertheless, my point is, I think we're still far away from the moment when the AI becomes a big part of the M&A.
Definitely.
Because the practice around that needs to be settled.
Yeah, I do think it's like it's something we will see more and more starting from 1 year or even 2 years from today. I think today, like there is not a lot of product besides ChatGPT, OpenAI, yeah, that are really innovative in terms of generative AI and like they're like leading the market. And I think this is the first step. Firstly, we will see companies that is really bringing something like extravaganza to the table, really good product based on generative AI. And then we will see more and more M&As and et cetera.
We're in the building phase, right? Like we're in that, so we're getting there, yeah, for sure. Well, so over the past hour, I've become a big fan of Alta, and I'm hoping listeners have as well. Are you guys hiring at all, if anyone is interested in working with you?
We are looking for a few roles currently, but I think the most relevant here will be that we're looking for a top-notch account executive that understand the market, understand everything that we're discussed in this conversation, and have a passion about data informed, leverage the data in order to drive business growth. If we have anyone listening to us right now. So yeah.
What locations are you hiring those roles?
So we're currently hiring Tel Aviv, but for the account executive, we are open for abroad.
Remote positions. Awesome.
Nice. Good expansion.
And you've mentioned a few other companies. Obviously, you have a bunch of partners, but who are some other companies either in the AI space or the go-to-market space that you want to call out that are doing great things?
I think we want to call out smaller companies, and Steph already called out, you know, the OpenAI, ChatGPT, and we talked about how great is HubSpot, and we love Monday.com, but that's kind of, we know those companies. But yeah, we all know them, and they're great, and we wish them growing and doing well. But I think from the smaller companies that are, you know, kind of disrupting the industry, and the companies that I see a lot in our space, we like Sweep because I think they are solving a big pain, and they also not far away from us here in Tel Aviv. I like them, and we like Rattle. I like their marketing. I don't know it too well, honest, but I do like what they do in the marketing side of things, messaging, how they approach the problem they're solving. And I think it's also a new startup, and I hope they are also going to, you know, grow and do well. We'll keep, yeah, an eye on them.
Habit-forming product that they have. It's like, yeah.
I love looking at the lens of like who's doing great things in the go-to-market space. And obviously we love Sweep as well. And we've had them on the podcast.
Of course. Yeah. Our friend Aviv and Ben were on the pod earlier. So yeah.
It's the ecosystem.
What are you doing for the bonus round? What are your top three tips that you want to give today?
So we thought about doing like three most popular data mistakes.
Love it.
Good. So the three most popular data mistakes are, first one is correlation versus causality. Many times we're taking graphs and going up. Like, for example, let's take ARR going up and number of pizza ordered to the company goes up as well. So maybe if we order more pizza to the company, we will have our ARR go upper. Because it's very hard to understand many times what is correlation and what is causality. If we have more ARR, we hired more people, so we order more pizza. This is why we love to say, like, think more data informed and not data driven, meaning data is more helping you make better decision and not data is making the decision. The second popular data mistake is P hacking. So P hacking, meaning we can have significant impact. Okay. We can say, okay, we have a segment that is much higher than the other segment in significant amount of data. But if we did it in a way that we like really search our segments and like if a statistic saying like we have 90% significant of this segment being higher than the other segments, but if we did it like 10 times, think about it, like if 10 segments, so we might have just false positive. So this is also a very, very common mistake that it's called p-hacking because it's when we are looking to say something is correct and we are looking into the data a little bit too much so we can find accidentally something that is significant because it's in the end of the day statistics. So it's like you have some percentages, 90%, so you have 10% of being wrong. The third one is called Simpson's paradox. And this is my favorite. Sometimes all the segments is going up. Everything is going like great, okay? But the weaker segment is going up faster than the strongest segment. So when this happened, you can say, oh, but everything is going great. All the segments is going up. Like, we're great. But in the end of the day, the conversion of everything is dropped. So how is it happened? And the reason is that the blend can change. So when you're looking at segments, it's also important to look always at the highest level, not just on the segments. This is the third.
I love those.
Yeah, all of them are good. Lena, did we write something about the correlation and causation?
Yeah.
I guess we did.
One of your articles, I tell you, I love it. Like when Sav is talking about data, because she did a lot of things around data. And it's like, it's the numbers. And then it's actually not just numbers in the paper that we learn in school, but it's actual things happening in the business. And cool. Yeah, if you don't know those mistakes, you can really call for that. So yeah, I love learning. I didn't know the name of Simpson paradox.
I didn't know p-hacking either. So I just learned so many things. Thank you.
Yeah, you probably have seen them or heard about them without knowing the name, because that's a kind of common theme. But it's good to put the right tag around the concept. Yeah.
Well, I think that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. It was a really fun conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.